This episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising is sponsored by Tight-Lipped. This episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Cut to the motherfucking intro. Inner Hoa Uprising. Okay, welcome to the Inner Hoa Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, who is from New York City, which is the main point of this episode,
skirt,
and is awake and alive at 8 a.m. on a Saturday.
Wow, yay, yay!
Applause. Yeah.
And me, Rob, one pansexual, agender, feminist, firefighter, whose pronouns are they, them, daddy. I am also awake at 8 a.m.
Full do-rag on.
Full do-rag. I was like, let me brush my baby hairs down and leave them there until I do what I gotta do or whatever. So,
also want to note, because this is a podcast, sometimes you might hear Rob's little doggy in the background. This episode is very New York, and this is a very New York dog in that it doesn't shut the fuck up.
Like, he's looking at me like, I don't shut the fuck up. I'm shut the fuck up right now.
I'll make you shut the fuck up, nigga. Come on.
It's like, we're gonna make him my selfie. It's gonna be him with my headphones on in front of the mic.
I wish I could send you the studio fitted. We have a fitted in big crucifix studio, but we haven't been recording in person, but it is still here waiting for all of you. It's a dawn on top of your head. Okay, every episode of the Inner Hoa Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dives on episodes of a topic of our choice. And sometimes we do full media reviews on episodes. So on this episode, you're all about this dead ass this and facts be that, but what was it really like to grow up in New York City? Particularly, what the fuck was it like to grow up into a sexual being in New York City? Well, today we're talking all about sex, love, and dating as early adolescents and taking a look at a Netflix teen drama that claims to spill the tea on youth in the Big Apple.
Mm-hmm. And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Hoa Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it.
We're going to introduce Hoe of the Week now.
Grandma, yeah. Are you a hoe?
Are you a hoe is really the question. And the answer, if you're these couple of people, is yes. So this is Hoe of the Week. It's the segment where we shout out the homies who have supported Inner Hoa Uprising in the past week. And Hoes of the Week get special nicknames. And the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. So this week we have Chereki R, a.k.a. Tasha Mack, who became a patron on Patreon. We got MW, a.k.a. M-Dub, who became a patron on Patreon. We got Cecilia, a.k.a. A-Ro Ace with the bad knees. I'm sorry, it's actually A-Ro Ace with bad knees, for doing a lovely TikTok shouting out the black aromantic, asexual, demisexual homies, including our very own Akua and also our homie Estefany over at Bag Ladies Podcast, and just putting me onto some other asexual, aromantic people who I didn't even know were asexual, aromantic. So that's good representative work that you're doing over there, Cecilia. Mm-hmm. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written or shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, though, so we understand that in these uncertain times, you might not have the capability to monetarily support us, and that is okay. Please do not spend your last dollars on us. Put you and yours first. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. The links to all of which are in the show notes, so you don't have to remember that right here and now or write it down. Also, a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any Patreon tier, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops, parties, and virtual events like tonight. We're singing!
Mm-hmm. Yes!
Clearing out our vocal cords. So if you're not a patron, you unfortunately missed the fact that we did Valentine's Vocals and Vibes, which was a karaoke event, but maybe we'll see you next month for another event. Okay, all right. So we're going to get into our first and only segment of the day. Let me do the drop for that, because this is near and dear to both of our hearts, right, Rob?
Yes, our first time doing it together.
Ass to media. I want to see you watching Ass to media. I want to see you reading Ass to media. I want to see you giving Ass to media. Ass to ass.
Very important moment. That was historical. That was fucking historical.
And it's so like light. It's like, it's so like wispy. I don't know.
It is very fucking wispy. Okay, this segment is Ass Media, if you did not gather that from the title. It's not Ass Tube Media, that's just a joke. It's a segment where we give book, TV, podcasts, and film reviews on things that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. And today, it's not so much a review, but a recap and a reflection. However, there will be spoilers, so, you know, if this is something that you want to watch in the future, just know that. Know that. Mm-hmm. So today we are reflecting on the Netflix teen drama Grand Army. This is a series that follows the story of five students at a fictional high school in Brooklyn as they struggle with sexual, racial, and economic politics and fight to succeed and become somebody. Who wrote that? I don't really like the become somebody part. They are doing that, but I just don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like that either. Nigga said, you are nobody.
Yeah, I don't, whatever. Who the fuck wrote that? The show deals with themes like racism, mental health, sexual assault, homophobia, and poverty. And today we're going to look at those five characters. We're going to walk you through what they experienced on the show. We're going to tell you how we did relate or did not relate to their experiences. Plus, we're going to give you a New York City and high school validity rating on each character. But before I begin, we must address the controversy, as English people say sometimes. I'm just going to say controversy. Anyway, 8 a.m. Before we begin, I do want to note that when Netflix dropped this trailer for Grand Army on September 2nd, 2020, remember that year, a writer came forward on Twitter and said that herself, along with two other writers of color on the show, quit due to racism on set at the hands of the showrunner. For context, the writer is an Asian woman named Ming Pfeiffer, and the showrunner is a white woman named Katie Capellio. One of the tweets said, it like outlined a bit of what happened, like we experienced racist abuse on set, and then at the end it said, who's going to interview us? So naturally, after those tweets, some journalists replied with interview requests. I also want to note that the journalists that I saw replied seemed to be people of color. I think I saw like one Southeast Asian person and one black person. However, since then, no further statements or actual interviews came out from either Pfeiffer, nor the other writers, nor Capellio, nor Netflix about these allegations. So something was silenced. But I still wanted to hold space for said writers, and I think that this welcomes a larger conversation about who gets to tell which stories and how, because this is largely a diverse show, I would say, about a diverse city and a diverse borough. And I think we'll kind of touch on a little bit of that in our recaps. But I also want to say that it opens up a conversation about who gets to speak up about what and when. Lastly, we want to say that we do not condone racist abuse on set of anything or in any facet. And to read more about what Ming Pfeiffer had to say, you can hit the links in our show notes. So, since this episode is largely about the high school years, we're going to do a quick summary of ours. Rob, you went to high school before me. By like a year. So wow. Naturally you should begin.
So I went to high school in Queens. I did not get into the Grand Army High School. It's like that in the fictional world is based on a real life school, specialized high school. You have to take a test to get into it. And it's actually a very difficult school to get into. It's one of the top specialized high schools in the city.
Yeah.
So my school itself was diverse-ish. There definitely were not a lot of white people. The white people that were there weren't like white Americans. They are like German Americans or Russian Americans, or it's a lot. Yeah, just basically from Europe. Mm-hmm. But mostly just black kids, Caribbean kids, and Latinx kids. And it was very small, like super duper tiny.
How big was your graduating class?
My graduating class had to have been like maybe just over 100 people.
Wow. Yeah, that's
small. Our yearbooks were so small that they would add underclassmen to supplement the yearbooks.
I was going
to
say it's a pamphlet.
It almost was a pamphlet. If we didn't add anything in there, it would have been a pamphlet.
Did they give y'all hardcover or?
Yeah, they had to be hardcover because I made it beefy. If it wasn't hardcover, it'd be like this fucking little.
It's a sheet. It's an info sheet.
This nigga graduated. So I was the third graduating class.
Wow.
When I left, it was like it's that fucking new. And most of the upper class women hated me because I was gay and I was very masculine presenting, even though I seriously could not dress. I mean,
to be fair, like, nobody could at that time, nigga. Like, come on.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was
even 13. Good dressing was like, okay, great.
Like, congratulations. Yeah. Good dressing was niggas from Harlem. And I tried to emulate that and it probably just made everything worse. But I was like a little gay baby. It was pretty obvious, even though I never actually said I was gay. So the high school team bullied the fucking shit out of me because the guys that they liked me.
You said the high school team, you meant the basketball team?
Yeah, the high school basketball team, my fault. Yeah, the women's high school basketball team bullied me because the guys that they liked me, even though I look like a little boy, and I guess they had their own insecurities, and yeah, they bullied the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But whatever, I was so cute, so that gave me like a little bit of confidence. And I didn't start dating boys until I was 16, because that's when I realized I was not a lesbian.
Damn. An unfortunate year.
Right? I just wish that I would have just kept going.
Sad. We hate to see it.
The end of the world.
Exactly. All right. Thank you for that. I also went to high school in Queens. I went to, I guess this is the part where I say this. I did get into Grand Army. So Grand Army is an analog for Brooklyn Tech. And like Rob said, you got to take a test to go in. But I did not go because I've always prioritized my peace over labor. And it was very far. This is in like deep part of Brooklyn. And yeah, I just like ran into some of those kids at like high school fairs and shit like that. And I was like, that's not the type of life I want to be living. I want to like have a good, school life balance. So I didn't go there, but the school that I went to was extremely diverse. So it's in an Asian neighborhood or a predominantly Asian neighborhood. So most of the kids, maybe like 45% are Asian, but the other 50% was a good balance between Black, White, Latinx, non-Black, Latinx, all those kinds of things. There's Southeast Asian kids. There was just a lot of people in that school, honestly. So you're just going to have a lot of diversity. For context, my graduating class, like it's like should be like 1,000 people, but you know, people like don't graduate sometimes. So it was like 800 people. And then
a lot of fucking people, man.
Yeah. Overall in the school, it was like over 4,000 kids in like 3 floors.
Didn't your school have like overcrowding issues?
Yeah, we had overcrowding issues. The main like thoroughway, like on the first floor, we called 42nd Street because it's like literally like Times Square. Like it was just like when I heard about schools opening back up for like coronavirus, I was like, that's a
nah.
Thinking back to no. That, if anything is like that not, school, that's a bad time. And then also you have like kids coming from all over Queens and like, this is just me getting into Queens. Like a lot of people who work in Queens work in like hospitals and stuff like that. So it's just like, no, don't do things like that.
No.
So I was not openly queer then, but I was attracted to women. And I was just like in my head, like, yeah, duh. Like women are sexy. Like, I wrote down, I just charged it to the game. And that's the best way for me to sum up how I guess, contended with those feelings. And I never felt like I had to really contend with those feelings or come out to anybody or anything like that, because I also was attracted to boys. Many things in that school opened, not just that school, but just like life in general during that time, opened my eyes up to rape culture and racism. And like, I think that that is truly the beginnings of my anger, which launched me into being a feminist, which is why you have this podcast today. So yeah.
Yay.
And I began fucking and sucking at 16. I think I began dating at maybe freshman year. Is this the part where I say I dated somebody in high school Rob interacted with as an adult? Can we say that?
Oh. Like, we just can't escape this ever, right? Yeah. That's my nigga, though.
It's one of the things that links us. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so random because the way that I met him had nothing to do with you. It just came, it all came so fucking full circle.
New York is small. It's big, but it's small. Yeah. You mean, I've been on vacation and niggas is like, oh yeah, I'm from Brooklyn. It's like, this is Dubai. Like, why are you?
My nigga, I met that nigga in Florida and then I met him again in Kuwait.
New York doesn't make no sense. New York
don't make no goddamn sense.
All right, let's talk about how we felt about the show before getting into the show. Do you want to go first?
Sure. So I watched it recently. I think I watched it in December. And by the first episode, I was confused because it was very reminiscent of 9/11. Right? Yeah. So it just starts off going.
Yeah.
So you already.
There's a terrorist attack.
As somebody who's lived through 9/11. Yeah, there was a terrorist attack. So that's somebody who's lived through 9/11, who was in school during 9/11. And I think this might have been also in the very beginning of the school year.
Yeah, it was.
So it was like, who are y'all talking to? Mm. What audience are you talking to? Are you also talking, you're talking to the audience that's lived through it and was in school during it, which is a very large majority of like 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And then you're also talking to people who've never been through it so they can see what it was like, right? And it's also a very, very New York City specific event, mm-hmm. but it drew me in and it also like made me put my guard up just a little bit. Cause I'm like, all right, I know that just mad traumatic shit is about to happen. If we're starting off like this, I know this is just, the shit rolls downhill and it's only going to get more traumatizing, but I'm like, I'm ready. Mm. I'm ready and willing.
So I'll talk about how I felt about it in a second. Two things. I read that this book, what is this called, a show, the show is based off of a play, it's very ADM, the show is based off a play called Slut the Musical or something like that, which is about something that a different character storyline, which we'll get to, but that was written in 2013. And so also the showrunner is currently or a former teacher in some capacity in New York City, so I feel like this show is a culmination of everything that she's witnessed kids experience. Cause there's definitely a lot of things that are like, oh yeah, like I definitely been through that, especially 9/11, as somebody who's 28 right now. And then there were some things where I was like, is that what the kids are doing these days? So I'm just like, I feel like it's just been a kind of a culmination of what she's seen over the past 20 years. I just put that on her. I don't know if she's been working for 20 years, but that sounds like a good number. So I not enjoyed that it started with 9/11, but I thought that it was a good, it made sense as a launching point for me because yes, that's an extremely traumatic thing. And yes, traumatic things happened in the show, but that just felt very natural to what it was like to grow up in New York City.
Right.
It was just like, yeah.
You saw how calm everybody
was?
Yeah,
it was like, damn, there's a terrorist attack. And also this, like, okay, to be fair, when 9/11 happened, I was in fourth grade. So I was like 9 or 10. So yes, that shit was very fucking scary. It was just like, oh shit, is it like we're about to pop off into a world war? Where are my parents? Like all that kind of stuff. But afterwards, though we didn't have like large scale terrorist attacks after that, there were a lot of fears. Like it was kind of like growing up in like the Cold War era where it was just like, all right, we got to do this drill, nigga. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. So it kind of just became like terrorist attacks be happening every day, even though they don't, but we're very like desensitized to it. So it was just 100%. Like, to start with that is just like, okay, I am also desensitized. Let's shake hands and go on with this.
It makes you, and you didn't even realize how desensitized you were until you saw the students desensitized. Yeah. Because even though they were too young to have been alive during 9/11, just probably the overexposure to 9/11 and 9/11 type things, it's like, whatever. Like that last time in a few years ago in Chelsea where that bomb went off in the dumpster. Mm-hmm. I was on my way to the club and I proceeded to continue to be on my way to the club. The club was in Manhattan. And I'm just like, because we were so desensitized.
Yeah. Yep.
Not anymore. I wouldn't do that again, but young niggas.
I think the last attack that I experienced when I was in the city was when somebody like drove into a crowd of people over on the like downtown, and it was also Halloween or like the weekday before Halloween, and I just linked up with my brother and we went to the Halloween parade. Like,
I'm fucking dying. I said, proceed as usual.
Like, you good? All right. You got your costume.
New Yorkers. Nice. All right, we go. Exactly.
All right. So when I watched the show, I watched it a little bit further back than Rob. I think I watched it in October. But I do remember enjoying it. But bear with me as I'm just like, wait, what? That happened? I love a good teen drama. It's why the music for this whole segment is based off of a obscure episode of Skins. So I like Skins and Degrassi and all that kind of shit. To me, the actors felt pretty authentic to New York City. And some parts made me feel like, damn, like what I said earlier, like, damn, it was like this. And some parts made me feel like, damn, was it really like this, though? So, yeah, overall, I think I enjoyed the show. So now we're going to go into our New York City validity ratings. So New York City validity rating, I'm just going to give it an 8.
Okay.
How about you?
I gave it an 8.5. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly due to the lack of very specific food references.
Like the halal cart?
Like the halal cart.
Like
the Chinese food. Like niggas could have went to a fucking Flatbush for some Chinese, the Chinese chicken wings that they be lined up at the store. The pizza, niggas would be like, oh, this piece of trash, but this piece is good. Dollar slices.
Dollar slices are important.
Yeah. OD important. And chopped cheeses.
Honestly, anything. Did they eat in that fucking show?
I think they, so they did go on that that one date. Dom went on that one date.
And she had pizza, right?
Yeah, they had pizza. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the rest of it was just like food that they had at home. But no, it wasn't really, it was never like meals. So I'm like, you could have, if you wanted to make it authentic, you know,
you could have had the halal, you could have had the dollar pizza.
Niggas could have had the halal car outside the school.
Yes, right there. Yes, right there. For me personally, it was dollar McChickens. And then asking somebody for a dime.
Because it was $1.09.
And then getting a water cup and putting Sprite in it.
Yup. Or I used to get double cheeseburgers. That was a dollar.
Yes.
Double cheeseburger. And then if I was balling enough, I'd get a milkshake.
Ooh.
Bitch.
Fancy.
Bionic stomach.
Back in the day, like, what the fuck was I eating, boy?
Yo, what the fuck?
Okay, so high school validity rating. I'm also saying an 8. I just don't remember being, like, egregiously offended by any of, like, oh, that's not high school or that's not New York. Mm-hmm. So I'm just giving it an 8.
I gave it a 9. I felt it was very high school-like. And I don't think any of the show was too mature for high school. Like, even the things that were just, like, I feel like my parents would just go, what the fuck? That's just really how it is. Like, it was really, really how it was. But there were some things where I felt like could have been expanded on more. Like, even just the youth, like the actual youthfulness of these kids, because they were also portrayed as adults a lot. Mm. Is what I felt like they were portrayed
sometimes
as
it,
a lot like adults.
Sorry, continue. Okay.
No, that's it.
Sometimes it was just like, damn, these niggas have the fucking weight of the world on their shoulders.
Boy.
But then some instances, it was like their kidness would come out. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, yes, you're still fucking up.
Yeah. I want.
But there could have been
more
of that. Yeah, there could have been more of that.
Because like I have like very few scenes of the kidness, like that one scene with Dom out with her friends, trying on shoes, waiting all night to talk to a guy. I was like, oh, that's real life. But it was like, that was one scene.
Yeah.
You know, could have been more. Niggas were literally like 16, 17. I think she was 17, turned 18.
Yeah, and I don't think that it was too mature for what high schoolers have been through. It actually could have been way worse, to be honest.
Oh yeah,
it could have been way
I'm happy
worse.
That it wasn't. I think that would have just been OD.
It's just airing out everybody's business on Front Street. That's what that is. All right, so we're gonna go into our character breakdowns now, and we're starting with Dominique Dompierre. Go for it, Rob.
So Dom is a Haitian American junior who also stars on the school's women's basketball team. She has her mother with risky spending habits, an older sister who didn't finish high school partly due to getting pregnant, and two younger siblings. They all live together in a small apartment. She aspires to become a therapist. Dom's character arc is a student doing well in class and on the basketball team, has a love interest, family falls into economic strife, whereas Dom begins working late and sacrificing school, sleep for income, begins losing sense of self, and comes full circle by the end of the season.
What a great synopsis.
And I wrote that.
I was going to say, just to note, Rob wrote that themselves. I was just taking a guess because I couldn't find any synopsises on the internet. Nobody really gave a fuck about this show. Yeah, nobody gave a fuck about this show. Maybe that's what happened when your showrunner's racist. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Although I didn't hear about that. I watched this because a guy told me to watch it, and I was like, thanks. Okay, so these are our reflective moments. So I can't really relate to the economic strife that Dom experienced because I grew up middle class, and I'm not saying this for no reason. I'm just saying it's a flex on like, can't relate to you, brokey. No, that's not what I'm doing. I'm saying that because one of the things that I saw pop up, especially after hearing about what happened with the showrunner, is that Dom's story specifically being critiqued as poverty porn. But I feel like, and I'm curious to know what your feelings on this, I felt like that was offset by another character who we're going to talk about later, another one of the five main characters named Jason, who is pretty well off, if not the most wealthy student out of the five.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like niggas do be like impoverished though sometimes. Like, yeah. And I didn't feel like I didn't feel like that was a stretch or something that doesn't happen in New York City. Like, there mm-hmm. is a severe amount of economic equality in mm-hmm. this city and this country in general. And yeah, she didn't feel like, one thing I liked about her was that she never felt like a straight up superhero to me. Like, it wasn't just like the type of kids that you see on New York One, like, she's going through this, this, and this, but she's still making it through. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like severely sleep deprived. She was like failing tests. She was cheating on tests. She was having relationship issues with the kid that she eventually started to date when she gets the internship for the career path that she wants to pursue. I think she misses like the first mm-hmm. interview meeting or something like that because she overslept. So it was like, it's not like porn. It's just what's happening. It wasn't just like all bad and it wasn't all good. It was just like, it'd be like that sometimes to me.
Yeah. I think that it would have been, it wouldn't have done real true due diligence to the New York City school system to not include somebody who lived in poverty because yeah. so many people did.
Yeah.
I think that would have been it would have been unfair to not include those stories of the people who have to, most people in high school did not work and go yeah. to school. And mm-hmm. she was like legitimately working and sacrificing her potential education. Like, she wanted to go to college and she was like almost about to fuck it up because it's like, either I go to college and I leave my family behind or I work. It was yeah. like two choices almost, like fucking New York City gave her an ultimatum
basically. Yeah And I feel like as a storyteller, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation, because yeah. if you don't include that story, it's just like, the fuck you think New York City is like? Like, all kids is just all the black kids is just living good. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, it's poverty porn. It's like, it just be like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Here's an instance that I wanted to bring in my own experience into. And I do wonder, because I was not in the writer's room for, you know, the show being built and stuff like that. But I do wonder what the showrunner in her experiences as a teacher may have placed on people. Because maybe she just saw a kid who like just had a fucking part-time job because they was a go-hard or something like that. And she just like created this whole story around her. So here's an instance that I have. I had a science teacher who placed a poverty porn narrative on me after I got one single 75 on a test. So this was chemistry. I was very smart in fucking high school. I was like in one program that was for law because it was like a law school or whatever. And then I got placed in the science and math program because I was that good in science and math. Shout out to my In Those Jeans shirt. Hey, that's not what I'm wearing, that, but it fits. But yeah, so I was like stellar student, getting like 90s all day every. I was also on the track team. And one time I sprained my ankle. So I was out of school for a couple of days. And like I said, I've never prioritized labor over peace. So it was like, I'm not calling niggas to get the homework. I'm injured, nigga. Like, when I come back, it'll be what it is. So I came back and I like got a 75 on a test because I wasn't studying. But I didn't fail. Like in school, what is it, like 55 is failing?
Yeah,
or anything under 65? Yeah. I didn't get that. But I fucking... Like, she hands me back my paper and she calls me to, like, in our schools, we have like a regular section and then like a lab section.
Mm-hmm.
So she pulled me back to the lab section or whatever. And she's like, I see the path that you're going down and it's not a good path. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yikes.
And she was like, the path that you're going down, girls end up pregnant in an abusive relationship and working at McDonald's. Because I got 175 on a test. Here's like the instances of racism, right? So like, this is like an honors science class, honors math program or whatever. The majority of the kids in that, because of structural fucking racism in this city, honestly, is like predominantly East Asian kids, Southeast Asian kids, and white kids. I was one of two black people in the class. Those niggas used to cheat off me. They would consistently get 75s on test, but they never got pulled to the back of the classroom and told that they're going to end up fucking pregnant in an abusive relationship. I got one 75 because I was injured. I gave you my doctor's note. Why am I on this path? Because you're placing some shit on me. So I had a lot of instances of like racism like that in that school, unfortunately.
It just made me mad. It made me sad.
Shit is fucked up, son. Like for no reason.
I feel like so with the showrunner diving into this, I also wonder if it was something as simple as like to also like know that this like something like this actually happened for fact, right? Because it's really not that far-fetched. Mm-hmm. And I do know of like having teachers who were not, I mean, granted, it would have been a stretch to be like, yo, you about to end up in an abusive relationship and pregnant and die. Yo,
she was wilding.
Overdose. Like, you know, it would have been a stretch to OD. However, I had teachers who did see me like having consistent fails in high school. Like I too was like super duper fucking smart. I was in junior and senior math and science classes when I was a freshman. Again, all these things used to copy off my shit too. But I went from like doing super well in all these classes, not like 100s, and I'm like, I ain't no fucking genius, but I did pretty well. But then suddenly to failing and having to take classes again and again. Mm-hmm. And it was never a matter of pulling a nigga to the side, like, bitch, are you okay? Because I was not okay. I was depressed as fuck. And, you know, it was very obvious and a very stark decline in my grades and how I was sleeping in class or just straight up stopped showing up to class. And I kind of, it would have been cool to have a teacher, you know, be more concerned, you know, not to place a narrative on me, but to find out what the narrative was, because it could just be like, I really don't give a fuck. And then that's like a personal thing. Or it could be like something's really happening and you just don't know what it is. And, you know, you as a teacher, your job isn't just to fucking teach. Like you see these niggas so much. Mm. I had math class every day at the same time because my schedule was a little bit different than other niggas. So my schedule was the same every single fucking day. It was depressing. And it's like, so you could tell a change in a child.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's about being a fucking soft place to land. Like, oh, if something is going on, you can talk to me.
I'm gonna be a jagged edge. You have anything else for Dom?
Okay, oh, so, I thought her friends were very cool.
Yeah, I was so. Yeah, I fuck with her friend circle because at time Dom was OD mean, right? When she was going through some shit, like, because the shit that she was going through was like building up and building up and building up. So she was very mean to her friends and very mean to her boyfriend. But they were still like, even when niggas were mad, they were still coming back. I was like, yes, because she really needed it. And I felt like they understood, like, deep down inside, like, yo, we're not in the same situation she's in. She's in a very tough situation. And we can't just leave her hanging because she's making us feel some type of way. That is like some strong ass support. That doesn't even happen in the adult world. So it really, you know, it was seriously
some down ass niggas.
For real. It was very refreshing to see. Also Dom's character being Haitian American, they spoke Creole, which I really enjoyed.
It was good. Like it wasn't like it didn't seem like a fake ass Haitian accent.
No, like they were really speaking like Creole, and then she also had a Haitian accent. Mm-hmm. Like it was very light. Like unless you're, you know, Haitian niggas, you hear the Haitian wispiness. So it was cool to see some like real Afro-Caribbean shit like shining through, and it wasn't Jamaican. Because that'd be like the only fucking Afro-Caribbean ethnicity.
Or it wasn't we're Haitian, but they sound Jamaican, which happens a lot.
And it's like, how'd you do that? What both of y'all?
How and why? Like, get a consultant, please.
Nigga said no. and I too grew up middle class. My parents grew up in extreme poverty, but my mom went to Brooklyn Tech. She went to Grand Army High School. So I was, you know, something that never occurred to me, like, what was your school experience like being somebody who did have to struggle financially? Like, did it not make a difference as school was an escape for you? Or did you struggle with school? Because my mom graduated, and a lot of people who went to those schools, their trajectories were amazing. Like, It was kind of like going to LaGuardia High School for performing arts, and not most, but a good majority of those niggas do continue in that career path and end up in very high places. And that's kind of what happened with Brooklyn Tech. But it's like, I'm about to go to drive to Jersey with her right now, right after this. I'm about to just start butchering her with fucking questions. I want to know what it was like.
It's a fun oral history to get.
Yeah, I mean, because it's important to know. and to so I can share and just have that in my repertoire of things that I have experienced secondhandedly through my parents experiencing it. And that's cover. I love you, Dom.
Cool.
Great actor, by the way.
Yeah, Dom was great. I feel like New York City validity rating, all there. High school validity rating, all there, I think. Character relatability rating, not for me, but definitely seems like a girl that I could have known in high school. So shout out to you, Dom.
Yes, I'm all there as
Hope to see you go places.
Accolades, accolades, accolades.
Okay, and before we get into our next character, we want to tell you a little bit more about something in the realm of storytelling, and that is Tight-Lipped. So Tight-Lipped is a storytelling podcast creating a public conversation about quote-unquote private pain. They feature honest personal stories from people living with persistent vaginal and pelvic pain. So many of us have pain with sex, pain with gynecological or pelvic exams, UTI symptoms that won't go away, or feeling like your vulva is on fire. It's so common that it impacts 1 in 4 people with vaginas, yet many people struggle to get a diagnosis, treatment, or even just be taken seriously. These conditions impact our mental health, our identities, intimate relationships, and day-to-day activities. At Tight-Lipped, they believe their work has the power to shift the narrative around sex, pain, ability, and chronic illness. They ask, if so many of us have vaginal and pelvic pain, why aren't we talking about it? How do so many people harbor the belief that pain is normal or not deserving of treatment and care? Tight-Lipped is not only a podcast, but also an advocacy organization by and for people with chronic vulvovaginal and pelvic pain conditions. They are fighting for a world where those with these conditions are diagnosed correctly, treated effectively, and given compassionate care. You can check them out on any podcasting platform or on their website, tightlippedpod.com, to listen to their podcast and get involved in their advocacy / community organizing work. That is tight, T-I-G-H-T, lipped, L-I-P-P-E-D, pod.com. All right, let's go to Siddhartha Sid Packham.
So Sid is a high school senior who is on the path to get into Yale. He's on the swim team and the star athlete. He also has a girlfriend, Flora, although he is questioning his sexuality. He is of Indian descent, and after the opening episode's terrorist attack, he has anxiety surrounding his ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that. So Sid, definitely also a kid who I feel like I could have seen in high school. There's a lot of people who were ID'd as straight in high school who I was like, I don't think you're straight. And now they're not. And it's like, okay, it just be like that. That's fine.
Yeah.
So my point is to that is just like a lot of niggas do be gay and figuring that out in high school, though. So that's like a really valid thing. Mm-hmm. I do want to, from like the back in me perspective, take note of like the casual homophobia, and maybe this is me going on a really long diatribe for no reason, but we'll see. But like, so Sid is questioning his sexuality and kind of afraid to come out, not only because of his parents, but also because school is not a soft place to land on sexuality, which I thought was interesting because a strong element of the show is like, we're Gen Z. We don't really care about that anymore. Like, everybody's free to love and that kind of stuff. But these kids weren't really very LGBTQ affirming or race affirming or
anything. Not massage.
They were just like very, these kids were very bigoted, like low key, but high key. But yeah, I just want to like kind of rectify now, like the ways that I perpetrated casual homophobia, like back in the day. Like, fucking gay as a bad thing is just like, that was high school language. Like, that was New York City high school language. Like, a lot of people are not past that, and a lot of people kind of still play in that language and say that they're LGBTQ affirming. And it's like, you still haven't rectified with that, but you still also haven't rectified with how bad you were in high school. And I just want to take the moment to rectify with, I don't think I was the worst, but I think I wasn't good in high school. And it's kind of like, it feels gaslighty to kids who were always off of that shit to be like, oh yeah, I've always been on this fucking LGBTQ affirming type stuff, because I wasn't. Other things. So on this show, they have like a social media ranking platform that's like an Instagram, I guess, feed where it has pictures of girls and someone who's alleged to have slept with a girl and like basically giving her a rating of sleeping with her. or what it was like to sleep with her. And at some point, Sid drops in this other character named Leela's name, who she's never had sex. They've never had sex, but he's like, oh yeah, like he has an encounter with her and he's like, oh yeah, gives great head or something like that. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
This is like a social media ranking platform. And if you are from New York, it's very similar to, it's like a Gen Z version of Pops on Blast.
Yeah, this was extremely reminiscent of what Rob is talking about, Pops on Blast, which was a Facebook?
Yeah, it was a Facebook page.
It was a Facebook page dedicated to pretty much outing girls for their sexual activity. Mm-hmm. So like if you are from New York City, then you know this, but if you aren't, pop is like a dated term for thought or hoe or whatever. And mm-hmm. on blast is like to expose. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was like expose these. I think there actually was a later one called expose these hoes.
I'm sure. I was in college. I'm sure.
Because I saw like kids who are still in high school posting that type of shit. But yeah, I'm sure like this is just a reiteration of things that happen over and over and over again. So it was definitely interesting to see an iteration of that mm-hmm. in this Gen Z space. When, you know, like I'm just very curious about Gen Z and these. It just seems like people are becoming more socially conscious, and this school was very, or this telling of this school was very much like, yes, we play in socially consciousness, but we are not really socially conscious. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if that was even accurate or not. Like, I just don't know.
That'd be a matter of talking to some niggas, because there really ain't no way to tell.
If you are Gen Z, like, or what's if you up? Went to high school recently, rather, let us know what the politic is like for that. Like, is shit like that still happening? At least in like a school in a quote unquote progressive city or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's also an instance where he is using Grindr to meet some folks. What I'll say about that is that I just can't imagine what high school would have been like if we had access to dating apps back then.
Yeah. Nah. Oof.
Yeah, I don't know. I personally would like catfish older people all the time mm-hmm. on just like web chats, like instant messaging chats and boards and stuff like that. So I'm just curious about what mayhem I would have gotten into.
Yeah, we don't want those parts.
It's fine. It's fine that it ended up the way it did.
Yeah.
All right. How about you?
So I related to this nigga a lot as a gay nigga in high school navigating my sexuality. I was outed because in the show he's outed, right? That's how we all find out that he's like gay. He wrote a paper for Yale, and in the paper he's mentioning his sexuality. What?
That's another thing. Just like, okay, quick insert. The fact that he has to use his being gay to write this paper, I think the teacher or whoever his advisor is, or maybe the other kid he's talking to, kind of like goads him into it.
Well, he wants him to talk about
something traumatic.
Being Indian after a terrorist attack.
Yes. College papers or college acceptance essays are just like, especially if you're like a kid of color or whatever, or a marginalized kid in any sort of way, it's just like, present to us your trauma as to why you should be admitted into our school,
mm-hmm.
which I think is very fucked up, but that is absolutely all the papers that I wrote, and I got into most of the schools that I applied to. So
I never wrote a paper because no, so I get that. Yeah, and he definitely put all his shit out on that paper, and I mean it worked. They got into Yale, but but that's how he was outed. Somebody took the paper off his computer, emailed it themselves, and posted it online, and that was that for everybody knowing his business. And I was outed by my brother. I'm not even gonna get into that shit. That shit is so fucking annoying. But it was just completely malicious. Just no fucking reason. And my parents reacted very much how Sid's parents reacted, which was either complete denial or stay the fuck out of my face. I don't really want to see you right now. Yeah. But I think the major difference between Sid, and this was like the happy ending, which I kind of appreciated, but I'm like, you know, this is very rare, which is his parents kind of come around a little bit. at the end.
I don't remember that, but yeah,
it wasn't like too much like, oh, we love you, we accept you for being gay. Oh, but yeah, they were still very excited, like when he got into Yale and they were celebrating with him, you know. If they were like truly on some fuck shit, like, we don't care if you got into Yale, you're still fucking gay. But it still came in like a little bit of a full circle love thing, but that's still very rare. Because niggas don't suddenly forget you gay. And if they hate you, a lot of times they don't hate you for a couple weeks. It was a very short time period that happens. Niggas be hating you for months or years. But, you know,
it's a process if it is a long come around.
And so he had a relationship with this woman, Flora. And I was concerned with the aspect of him being gay, even though his relationship with Flora didn't seem completely fake. Like, he did seem to really care about her and really enjoy her. It may have been a lack of sexual attraction, but there was no lack in the show of romantic attraction.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been dope to been explored as, you know, it's not that I'm gay, I just don't know what it is. And, you know, us knowing all these things, there's all of these things. There's, you know, the bi-romantic, bisexual, heteromantic, you know, there's so many different terms. And I think it would have been cool as this progressive show in this progressive space to also discuss some of these identities, as they only exist because we make them exist. Other than that, he could just be a nigga who really loves his girlfriend but really doesn't want to have sex with her and prefers to have sex with men.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like he ever has, like, even to the guy who helped him with his paper and he was working with, it still seemed like a very sexual attraction. He didn't seem to really like him, wasn't really into him. They didn't really know each other, but he wanted to make out with him. He got hard and around him and shit like that. So it was like, they could have did a little bit better with that one. But they also introduced the bisexual character, a male bisexual character, which kind of balanced it out a little bit. But it could have still been flipped and it would have been fine.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I totally forgot that I had that reaction. I thought that he was going to come out as pansexual, and I was like, oh, this show is really going there.
I'm
just a gay nigga.
And it's like, how?
Like, you love Flora. What do you mean?
And it's like, he does. He really does. And it's like, he really was taking the time out. But the cool thing about Flora's character is that she really tried to understand. But a part of it was like, she also took it very personally, which is like, the progressive of it, right? Like, it could have been more understanding, but it's like, you know, let's be realistic about it as well.
Yeah, I like that she wasn't understanding, because that was like her, like, every kid is like, oh yeah, I get all these things and I'm an adult and I'm a Gen Zer. I feel like I'm not trying to shit on Gen Z. I just really have this understanding that this is like a more socially progressive generation, and just seeing the way the show came out is like surprising to me. She's like, she's fucking quote unquote woke us out. Like, isn't she doing like poetry readings about feminism in the fucking like, she's an OD feminist, but even her, like, in a kid's mind, isn't all there yet. And I think that's like, it's fair to tell those stories. Like, people grow and shit like that.
And I mean, it wasn't horrible. It's not like she was like, oh, fuck you, nigga. She did try to understand. It was more so of her anger of, you were cheating on me. Which I think is still fair. You didn't tell me something
that was really important. Yeah.
Yes. I think that's also very valid feelings, even if they were not communicated in a safe way. But yeah, I mean, niggas do be kids. Niggas were 17, 18 years old, even though they were the older people of the show. They were still really young. And it's important to remember that. And I like how the show covered like a lot of racism. White people hate Asian Americans as well. I think, and even in the most current events, this is something that's being spoken about
for sure
in social spaces, that Asian Americans are not seen as being victims of racism a lot of the times, and those kinds of racist violent acts that happened they're not usually seen as racist. They're just seen as violent acts. And his anxiety, because it really was just anxiety. I don't think anything overt really happened to him. But
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think that was the only thing, was he was about to get his bag searched. I don't remember if he actually did or didn't, because in New York City, when you take the train, especially after some heightened security, the cops are allowed to search your bag. And That's only if you want to ride the train. You don't have to ride the train. You could refuse and then you just can't ride the train, or you go to another fucking train station or entrance. But if you want to get on the trains at that point, they have to be able to search your bag. And he was walking and he saw the cops, he saw the dogs, and he was getting all this anxiety because he felt like they would single him out. I can't remember if he, whether or not he was, but still just the anxiety, because it is something that's very real. Because after 9/11, there was a lot of Middle Eastern racism, a lot of Islamophobia. Yes. And especially with him being somebody of Indian descent, but not Middle Eastern descent. But you know, they all look the same,
quote unquote, yeah,
in that aspect. It's like the Islamophobia isn't just for Muslim people, it's for brown people. So I think that that was a very good angle, like, let's cover the racism on all fronts, because there's even more racism, but that's for Sid.
Yeah, there's even more racism. One thing I will say, maybe I'm just traumatized from going to just like what I thought was a very racist high school, but it could have been way more racist, this show.
Yeah.
If it was truly indicative of what it was like to go to school here in a quote unquote diverse school. And maybe that is something to being a more socially conscious generation. But there was a lot of just like inter-race racism. And I know that people of color can't be racist because that's not how power structure works. But I guess just like anti-blankness, just like anti-blackness from Asian people, anti-Asianness from Black people, Islamophobia from non-Islamic Black people, and vice versa. Like, there was just a lot of back and forth racism between people of color that didn't even involve white people. Mm-hmm. And then there was also racism from white people. Mm-hmm. So I think like that's really what a New York City school was, if not still is, like.
Yeah. That's
our
diversity.
So New York City validity rating. Yeah.
Yeah.
High school validity rating. Very yeah. Valid. Character validity rating. Not for me. I don't think I relate to any of these characters, but definitely a motherfucker that I would have known in high school.
And I related to that nigga. So he is 10 out of 10 for me.
Okay. In the interest of time, we're going to quickly gloss over Jason Jackson. His Jason has a Y in it. So I think that is indicative of what kind of guy he is. I think in general, I liked the actor and I wanted him to play Miles Morales. As a character, he was fucking up, man. He was very unaware of his privileges.
Yes.
So some backstory, basically Jason and Owen's his poor friend who's actually good at playing the saxophone. Yes. And Jason is like kind of getting good at playing the saxophone. Yes. But Owen is like a virtuoso.
Yes.
But Jason gets all of the things because he's privileged. They were like playing around with Dominique's bag and took her wallet for play. I know it sounds like it's not for play, but that's really just how high school works. And I feel like they faced harsh consequences because they were Black. But because Owen is poor and Black, he faced harsher consequences and he got kicked out of the school and couldn't play the saxophone.
And he went to some like fucked up high school where he got beat up and shit. It was so fucked up. That's what happens in New York City, by the way. If you get suspended or you get expelled or they feel like you're a troubled student, they send you to a high school with other people who are similar to you, and they are high schools that are neglected.
Sometimes it's that and sometimes it's not that. Sometimes you get sent to a quote unquote better high school. There was definitely a lot of people who got sent to my school.
I did not know that.
Quote unquote worse schools. I don't even know if that's the justification. They just like came from worse schools and school is pretty good. But it was a really weird thing to do, and suspension is just a really weird and like very racist, if not racist adjacent process. It's just like it is taking someone out of school and they need to be in school to learn shit.
Yeah, like and it mostly happens to like Black and brown kids. Take you out of school and put you in a place where you will not succeed.
Yeah, and then they're just like in the class and it's just like, who the fuck is this nigga? Yeah. How did you get, who are you? And it's like, oh, I'm suspended. I came from another school. And the teacher is just talking about shit and the kid doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about. Yeah. And then like, you know how it is, like, oh, there's a new nigga over there and he's cute or whatever. So everybody's distracting him and he's distracting the rest of the class. And the teacher gets mad and the teacher's probably racist. So they have the racism towards the kid.
It's very cyclic. If that begins a cycle,
it is
and then it begins the prison, the school to prison pipeline.
And that is really the beginning of the school to prison pipeline.
It's literally the beginning. Anybody who went to any of those schools that I know, most of them ended up in jail at some point in their lives. They're not all like doing absolutely horrible right now, but they did end up doing horrible at some point because those, I think, like satellite high schools, I don't fucking know, but there's just those schools that they just send like the shittiest people to, and they're just the shittiest schools when you go from top to bottom. I don't know, bottom up is different, but most of the time it's top to bottom.
It's also extremely hard to not go to those schools depending on what middle school you go to, because the middle schools are also incredibly fucked up. But that's for a different episode.
It is.
I went to a very bad middle school. Anyway, next up, lots of fake feminism. But first, is this conversation, this episode so far resonating with you, helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or allowing you to have a good ass time? You say that it is, and we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating for the homies. If you got some extra change, you can drop some PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or come join our Patreon community and access things like our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising, or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. We thank and love you all for your continued support. All right, we got two more characters. The first is Layla Kwan Zima.
Layla Kwan Zima. Layla is Chinese born, adopted by two Jewish parents. She is a freshman at Grand Army, struggling to fit in or stand out. Her sexuality, identity, religion, and ideologies all come into play and culminate at the end of the season.
Yes. Layla is very, very big. I don't like other girls. I'm not like other girls energy. And it's largely because she doesn't fit in. From the relatedness to this character standpoint, I definitely had a lot of that energy. And it wasn't because I didn't fit in. I just was an asshole, unfortunately. I think that is one of the themes of this episode. Samantha was an asshole in high school. I think something that Layla is dealing with is like the fact that she doesn't feel Asian enough, or is like bullied from her Asian peers for not being Asian enough because she was adopted. And to beat that same old dead horse, but like, I didn't feel Black enough growing up, and I didn't feel feminine enough or like womanly enough to be called either of those things. And I think at some point I was just like, okay, you're gonna keep making fun of me for this bullshit, or I'm just gonna like reject what you're placing on me. So a lot of that was very much like, I'm Black, but I'm not like other Black people. I have these interests. Oh yeah, I'm a woman, but I'm not like other women. I have these interests and I act this way. Halfway through high school though, I kind of flipped that and was just like, I don't know if it was like a lot of research on the internet or a lot of just like reflecting on personal traumas, but I just like started to realize that the people who were calling me not like other girls or not like other Black people were really my enemies. And I just started to hate those people. And that like really launched me into just finding out more about like particular social justice causes and anti-racist work and feminist work and things like that. That's me and Layla. She also has like a really dark edge to her.
Yeah, you don't find that out to the very end.
Things got very weird with her. Was kind of like, I don't know who this is an analog of, but maybe.
So her character in particular made me very uneasy. Mm-hmm. Made me super uneasy. She was eager to be liked, but she was mean. She was so fucking mean. Like, Dom was really mean when she was struggling. Layla was just mean, just off rip. Like, just very, very mean.
She was never a good friend.
No, ever. And she obviously struggled with mental illness. And it was like, okay, cool. You spend a part of the show trying to figure out what the angle was. And it seemed like she had antisocial personality disorder, which is like what you would say a sociopath is. So she very much lacked empathy. She lacked empathy for anyone around her, especially, you can see it by the struggled, like,
let's do a content warning for sexual assault.
Yes, big content warning. She dates somebody who's a rapist, and it comes out that he's a rapist. So everybody knows, it's common knowledge. And, you know, of course, the school is struggling whether or not to believe the victim, but somebody who's actively like dating and sleeping with this person, she doesn't have much of a struggle as much as it's, oh, this bitch is lying and he's not a rapist, and continues to sleep with him because it's lacking the empathy to even visualize the victim of the assault to be like an actual victim. Like, it was just, it was very just, nobody really else matters but me, even though it's not what she did try to make amends, but her amends were like, you hurt my feelings, so I think that you should do this, or, you know, I really wish that this wasn't like this, but it's because it's your fault. Like, very, like, her apologies were just lacking empathy as well. That was just my idea of it. Like, she was just that was her character take, was a person who was a sociopath and was undiagnosed.
Interesting.
And, you know, you also saw it because she was obviously trying to seek some kind of help because she did not know what the fuck was going on with her. But instead of seeking a therapist, she had a rabbi. And even after a while, the rabbi was like, yo, this is cool, but I think you need to talk to a therapist. And then she stole from the fucking rabbi. Like, it was just like,
yeah, just, she was. This was a very unhinged character. She stole a scarf for no reason. Yeah, I didn't get that.
But
I
it's didn't because, understand because that. She got fucking issues.
Very self-serving character.
Jesus Christ. I mean, but at the end, it's like it seemed like all she really wanted deep down inside was to get a pussy ate. And she was really struggling. She was fucking. That was the other thing about the rapist, is that the rapist wasn't even pleasing sexually.
I mean, yeah. And that's like, yeah. Like, because he doesn't fucking care about someone's body.
Never. He's like, yo, can you just suck my dick? Like, that was really kind of where that ended. So it was like, you're fucking with somebody who, fuck it, whether or not he cares about you, whether or not you care about that, okay. But you're fucking with somebody who, is actually trying to take the time to please you, but you're still stuck on this rapist nigga. So that is a plethora of issues right there. That was a character that I felt for, but was also like definitely scared by, because she began realizing the kind of power that she had. Fucking Lila Kwan.
One thing I will say about her is, in regards to the her just wanting to get her pussy ate thing and kind of like putting up with this person before she thought he was a rapist, and then after the allegations came out, even though they were true, that's like why I wish that pleasure was taught in sex education, because I think she's just very much like, okay, I want to have sex and it's going to be pleasing. And then she like realizes that it's not pleasing because the person who she's having sex with is not interested in pleasing her.
Yeah.
But she doesn't really know how to navigate that. Yeah. So then she starts writing like weird graphic novels.
Yeah, about fucking coochie eating his heads off. And yeah, it was super fucking
graphic. Which, I mean, artistic license, as long as you're not doing that, sure. But like, yeah, I think it's like, it's a trap that you can fall into as a young person wanting to have sex, but not knowing how to navigate conversations around sex and what you want during the sexual process, which is a very important part of sex education. And then I guess we'll get into this with this next character, but I definitely didn't view her lack of empathy for the character who was assaulted as antisocial personality disorder. So I'm glad that you brought that up. I think holds true, but associated that with her being in a very much like rape culture-y space, even though this is a school that lauded itself on all these kids being feminist and stuff like that. A lot of them were, they had no concept of consent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go into our next, New York City validity rating. Sure.
Yeah,
I didn't really know anyone of this particular.
Facet, I don't know,
but
I guess.
Anybody lives here, so it's possible. High school validity rating. It's definitely some weird ass bitches.
Yeah, it's definitely. Some yeah, weird-ass it's just bitches. Like when she came into the school, like you think of freshman 13, 14 years old. I gathered a lot older than that.
I knew some weird ass bitches who were that.
Yeah. I mean, I believe it. It was just like what came out was like 13, 14. But I'm like, you know, but
yeah.
And relatability.
I knew some weird ass people who were that age or so, they said, online.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of something that gets to her too. Like, these very dark thoughts are like private thoughts.
Yeah.
like for her, she was doing in her graphic novel, but a lot of people like say really, really weird shit online. Character relatability rating for the I'm not like other girls, definitely. For the I want to get my pussy ate. I also related to that part. Yeah.
I didn't relate to her at all. I wanted to fight her most of the time. So fuck the coin. All right. Last character.
Joey Del Marco.
Joey Del Marco, she's one of the only characters whose full name is often used. This is the only character you know her last name, not from a fucking synopsis. She is a conventionally attractive white junior, I believe, and potential captain of the dance team. She seems to be a good friend to her friends and also a feminist. However, she is racist. That's a fact. Yes. Anyway, her character arc is that she is constantly sexualized in school, starts a feminist movement, has a night out with a guy who really likes her, but she also enjoys attention from his friends, like a free spirit kind of character. She is subsequently raped by the friends while her crush sits by idly. Her character unravels from there.
Yeah, that was this was a tough storyline. Also, she is like, I would say the mainest of the main characters. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. I think she's like, that's why the play was called Slut. I think like the point is to center around her. Yeah, so being in high school, like I said earlier, like the end of high school, and I won't get too much into this because we don't have that much time, and also these are personal things to talk about, but definitely a few instances of sexual assault survivors coming forward about sexual assault that happened, and seeing people side with abusers or not say anything or not believe the survivors or not even address what happened is something that really, really radicalized me in high school and really, really got me angry. Mm-hmm. And I definitely related to I didn't even relate to anybody in that story because there was basically no one who ever believed Joey Del Marco. Mm-hmm. Like, her best friend doesn't believe her. Layla Kwan doesn't believe her. Other people on the dance team don't believe her because these guys are, like, nice guys, quote unquote, and Joey Del Marco is this free-spirited girl. And you see the feminism that Joey Del Marco has been spreading to all of these characters and that they believed in and supported her in kind of just, like, fall flat. And it's just, like, these kids have no concept of anything. Like, mm-hmm. They have no concept of feminism, they have no concept of consent, they have no concept of rape culture, they have no concept of empathy. Yeah, it was just really disturbing to see, and I definitely had a question for like Gen Z listeners, like, what are things like right now when it comes to sexual assault and consent? Like, what is being understood and what is being discussed?
So for me, Joey's character, it really put like a person to the phrase, she was asking for it. Yes. And it drove the point home that no means no, even when there was a yes involved. And I don't know, I'm not really sure who the intended audience of this show was, whether it was high school students and college students and older Americans. But I think that for like high school students and college students, I feel like it could open up a conversation about consent. And I hope that seeing it can give you another perspective on consent. Let's be honest, not everybody understands just from what they potentially learn in school, but most people don't learn this in school. So it's what you gather off of the internet or what people talk to you about. So this is a good starting point. Like, yeah, she was quote unquote wilding before, but it still wasn't something that, this should not have been a transition to her getting raped, even if everything else prior was consensual. And Joey seems to be a good friend. Like, truly, she did seem to be a good friend to her friends, and her friends are fucking horrible. And it's the interesting thing with the feminism, because I feel like for her, at least to whatever aspect that she could really grasp, her feminism was very serious. It was partially performative, but it had to be performative for her to get her point across. And her friends like proved that the feminism was only serious for her, and for them it was exclusively performative, because they were immediately victim blaming, including the person who, the very opening scene, she was pulling a condom out of her vagina. literally pulling a condom out of her best friend's vagina. And then the end, it's her best friend saying that she's a liar, she wants to fuck her up and shit like that, right? Her character shows how economic class factors into sexual assault, because she was able to abruptly leave school, she was able to stay home without truancy or child protective services showing up, and she was able to change schools and go to an all-girls private school. That is about 90% of the time definitely not the scenario. Most people don't have access to all of those things, are able to do all of those things. And also most people, I'm not just going to say most, but a good portion of people are not able to tell their parents something like that happened, especially with the conditions surrounding it, because of all of the video footage of the things that she was doing. Most people would be, you know, afraid to tell their parents because they're afraid their parents are going to be like, well, bitch, she was fucking bugging out. And I mean, like, what do you think was going to happen kind of deal, even though that should not be the response. It unfortunately usually is the response. And I felt for her character, but even though I hated all the white people in the show, including her, because she was definitely within her feminism was not intersectional.
She was a white feminist.
It was not intersectional at all. It was exclusively for white women. So she was very racist against Layla Kwan. However, that was not the reason why Layla didn't like her.
I thought you were talking about the Owen Jason thing, because she's the one who ultimately brings up the allegations of Owen stealing Dominique's wallet.
True. Yeah, I actually forgot that part. But yeah, she was the one pushing.
And she was being a white feminist.
When Dom was like, I don't know, I don't want to do this, she's like, I'm going to talk for you. I'm going to talk over you. I'm talking like this happened to me. Very fucking racist. But it was nice seeing at the very end her beginning to kind of find herself. Her finding that she's not the only one that this has happened to. So it seems like she was going to begin to find some kind of community in her new school. And also at the very end, one of the guy who was standing by idly seemed to start to have a change of heart, and seems as if he's going to come forward and say, because they were gaslighting her, essentially everybody was gaslighting her. The only person who knew what happened was her. But that guy is going to finally be like, yo, okay, cool, like, I'm really sorry, but like, you know, you're completely right, this is exactly what happened. Whole situation was pretty fucked up, but it's also very realistic. It's shit that literally legitimately does happen. I think that I could show my parents that episode, like, don't sleep, because the world is not fucking safe, and it's up to everybody to do their part in like really letting, like really just trying to educate these niggas on what consent is. But even then, I'm pretty sure those niggas knew what consent was and they just didn't give a fuck.
Well, I think this is actually something that I wanted to bring up. Like, there is this whole narrative that Gen Z is going to save us all and the kids are going to save themselves and everybody else. And it's like, no, like, this is what happens when you just leave like these very sensitive teachings to just kids. Like, there's no sex education class in this school or anything like that. There's no class about consent in this school. It's just Joey telling everybody. And like, that's not enough. Like, that's not the kids fucking learning about feminism on the internet is a very important thing, but that's not going to change rape culture. Like, rape culture is institutionalized and systemic, and to reverse it, it has to be an institutionalized and systemic like solution.
Yeah.
Like, just this one girl having a feminist crusade in her junior year of high school was not enough to teach all of her friends in her entire high school about how to support her when something like that happened.
I agree.
Yeah.
You're completely right.
New York City validity rating. I'm going to give that a 10 because there definitely be white girls who you said their full name for whatever reason. Like, yeah, that was an actual thing. And I do not know why.
Yeah, Joey Del Marco, 10. In high school validity, 10. Because niggas was definitely getting drunk and doing wild, random shit in high school.
10. Yes. Yeah, I'm surprised they weren't getting more drunk in school.
Yeah.
That's a very New York City thing. Like, niggas would bring fucking licks and like Tropicana bottles.
Not me. I wasn't drinking in school.
I wouldn't do that.
Nah, yeah, niggas definitely
I'm saying niggas would do that. Thing,
though, but I'm surprised they weren't doing wild drugs. Honestly, that was what I was surprised. I'm like, they was getting that drunk. Like, why don't these niggas get in smack? But you know, that's okay. We don't have to see that. It's not a must. Yeah, but cool.
All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed that recap and review of not only this show, but just like what it was like to be a budding person in New York City. Yes. Yeah.
Class of 2009.
Class of 2009. Nah, it's all about the perfect tens, baby. You can't get any better than that, son. You can't get any better. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
Yes, thank you for listening. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. And you can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community, spelled C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-I. And head to innerhopeuprising.com to pay a hoe. If you would like to follow me, rah, the god, you can follow me at the_body on Twitter and smoking PP on Instagram.
I'm SlamRid on Instagram, Twitter, and Clubhouse. Have a great week because you motherfucking deserve to. Bye.
Yes. Bye.